Hello and welcome back to Room Pack's Res Ed Chat podcast, where we highlight cool people who do cool things and talk about cool stuff in residence life and college student housing. I'm your host, Crystal Lay. I use the she, her series pronouns. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to talk to one of my favorite humans who I've known for quite a bit of time. I actually used to work with her husband. We were RDs together at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's worked at several universities over the years as a psychologist to talk to students and humans who literally are coming for support and resources and navigating well-being primarily folks who identify as Hispanic or Latino. And so I really wanted to get her perspective and her ideas on what it looks like for housing professionals to support students who live on campus who hold a Hispanic or Latino identity. And so with that, I will let our guest introduce herself.
Hi, thank you so much, Dr. Lay. I am Dr. Geneva Reynaga Abico, and I have been a psychologist for about 20 years, which is wild. And like Dr. Lay said, I've worked, you know, in a few different public universities as a psychologist and then also as a director of counseling centers before turning to my own practice in 2021, where I have worked full-time ever since. So I am Mexican-American from Southern California originally and was a first-gen college student. So really happy to represent all of those things.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And I am really looking forward to learning from and with you today, in addition to the folks who are watching. So thanks for joining us, Geneva. And then we can go titles or we can go first name. We just go with
Geneva.
It.
I'm totally cool with that.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. So my first question for you is, what is the support when you think about on-campus students, in your experience, what is a supportive on-campus living environment for students? What should we be providing?
Yeah. You know, I think in general, one where students can thrive, right? And obviously that's academics. We need them to be able to stay in school with certain grades and GPA and all that kind of stuff. But then personally as well, and we know this, housing professionals know this the best, when students feel included, when they feel seen, when they feel a part of campus, they're more likely to stay and do better. And that's what we're trying to do, right? So a sense of belonging is the greatest predictor of academic success, which sounds weird to people because they're like, that's just a personal thing. What does that have to do with the classroom? But we know how important all of that stuff is. And so I think when students see themselves reflected in the campus in whatever way is relevant to them, when they see themselves reflected in the material, in the classroom, off campus, all that stuff, it's really, it helps them feel at home, so to speak, or to have a home away from home, which is really critical.
Yeah, and you said thriving, right? Because I think sometimes our students are survival mode, or they're surviving, or we talk about, we want them to survive or thrive or do both. And so I'm glad that you named that language of thriving is what we aim for. And then really getting into that, what does it mean for you to belong? Because that belonging is linked to you achieving your goal, which is to graduate, you know, and meet your academic goal. So thanks for that. Yeah. So when you think about housing professionals, be honest with us, okay? What do we get wrong when we're creating living environments for students of color who live on campus? Because I would imagine you've had some folks who have come in and share some stories, and obviously you can't share those, but I wonder, what are the trends? Like, what are we doing wrong when we create environments for students who live on campus? And then how can we do better specifically for our students of color?
Yeah, I want to start and first say that housing professionals have such a hard job, right? So yes, you're officially housing people, but you're also therapists, whether it's responding to crises or just trying to help folks who are feeling homesick or adjusting or any of that kind of stuff, not to mention RAs and everything that they go, or whatever it's called, you know, at each university. And so I think it's a really hard job because we really are trying to have folks have a home away from home. And some folks don't come from a good home. So they bring that with them, or they come from, you know, never shared a room before, whatever it is. And I think all of that is really challenging. So I want to start by saying it's not possible to make everyone happy, as you already know, you know, in your role. But when we think about students of color, I think it's really important to remember that higher ed is still a predominantly white space. And even if we're at a campus that is a Hispanic serving institution or an HBCU or any of these beautiful terms that we have now, and those are important and that's really amazing, but still, so often the faculty are white or a lot of the staff are white. Student Affairs does a great job of having a lot of diversity, but a lot of other departments don't. And they're, I want to say, behind in this way, right? And so even if we have people of color represented in staffing or faculty, the institution is often still Eurocentric in how it operates, or being sort of individualistic, or just all of these things that come with sort of a white framework, for lack of a better term. And so I think it's really important that students of color see themselves on campus, in faculty, in organizations, in the material, whenever it's possible, right? And when we actually try to do that and try to engage the student, if they're willing to engage, they may not be, and that's fine. But if we really try to make it possible for them to share with us how it feels to be them on campus and then listen to what they say, because I think we do a great job of surveying, but do we actually listen to what the survey says, especially when it doesn't say what we want it to say or what we need it to say for our department reports or whatever goes on politically? I think students more and more are willing to be honest with us if we are open and able to provide some version of a safe space for them to share their experiences, right? And that can be pre, coming in, what they're hoping to have, whether it's realistic or not, doesn't matter. We can still try to hear it. And that can be post, right? Afterwards, trying to learn and how to make things a little bit better if possible, So I think, trying to think out of the box, trying to listen to students, and also trying to remember that no matter how much hard work has gone in and how much progress has been made, higher ed is still pretty Eurocentric, and that impacts people.
And I think when you name it that way, of some of our offices, particularly housing offices, may be more visually diverse, right? Or have folks holding these different identities. And we do surveys, there still might be this moment where maybe there's only 10 Black students who live on campus, and we get their words on the survey, but are we listening to them? Or do we discount it because there's only 10 of them, right? And maybe that's not good data. Maybe that's not enough. And I've heard that. I think that is one of the things that we can get wrong sometimes, is discounting an experience because of numbers on a survey, or oh, it's just three students, right? That's not enough for us to quantify that as we have a problem or issue or something to tend to. So I just want to add that piece too of, the listening piece. And in addition to surveys, are you doing focus groups? Are you meeting people? Do you truly understand the climate of not just the campus, but the actual communities where students are calling it home, like you said, a home away from home.
It's real. And if we don't have enough data for quantitative, great, let's do a qualitative focus group. Let's do other types of things. We have those methods available. I know they take more time. I know they're not as convenient, but if we're really trying to be inclusive and retain students, not just recruit, but retain, this is real.
That's so real. And like you said, it's both. And that's our students and our staff, because that's the representation piece. If staff don't feel good being here, if our professors don't feel good being here, they will leave. And that further impacts retention of students, and also their experience, their day-to-day experience, having folks to look up to and aspire to that look like them.
Absolutely.
So I want to transition right into our topic for today, which is talking about supporting our Latine and Hispanic students. We use Latine here versus Latinx, and so I know it can be different depending on your campus and regional areas. But can you explain the difference between being Hispanic and Latine? Are you able to help me out with
Yeah, totally. I
that?
love this question. It's a great question. You're sort of referring to regional differences, and I think that's really true. But just to back up for a second, I want to say that Hispanic is a term that was created by the government in the 1980s, by the Reagan administration. The census has tried to deal with us in so many ways for a long time, and still to this day, it changes stuff around. And so it was created as a way to sort of like name this group of people that the US was having a hard time fitting into a box, right? So Hispanic literally means people of Spanish background, Which is actually really offensive because
Okay.
most of us come from countries that were colonized by Spain. So to call people from those countries by their colonizer's name essentially is what Hispanic does, and it's incredibly offensive. Most people, that's not fair to say. A lot of people don't identify with this term, right? Or before the US created this term, did not identify with this term. So then Latino and Latina became terms that were considered more accurate and less offensive. And it was meant to be like a Spanish version of someone from Latin America. Now we could talk forever about what is included in Latin America and what that means and all that kind of stuff. But the term Latino and Latina were specifically to counter how offensive Hispanic was in a lot of spaces. But these terms are very gendered, right? Just like Spanish is very gendered. Latino means males, Latina means female. That kind of is the gender binary, male or female. And so Latinx became a term of, okay, how do we have a gender neutral term for Latin folks in the US, right? Latinx is hard to say, and people say, how do we say it? Is it Latinx? Is it Latinx? How do we say this word? And so Latine became a word that is supposed to be gender neutral and easier to say in Spanish or English or whatever. So people differ widely on what term they use. Sometimes that's by region, sometimes that's by field. Again, Student Affairs does an amazing job at keeping up with terminology and all that kind of stuff. The US government still uses Hispanic on all of its terms. My friends in law use Hispanic because that's what's used in legal spaces. Folks I know in other fields still use these terms because that's what's used officially, right? So even seeing like Latino or Latina, you're still not seeing that in some spaces, let alone the gender inclusive terms like Latinx and Latine. So I love hearing that you all are using that at NAU. I think that's an amazing thing. So we have to remember that no one really, these are US terms, right? Like no one really uses these terms outside of US, and it's going to vary by region and maybe even by exposure or preference or knowledge, depending on how people grow up and what they grow up hearing.
Thanks for sharing that. And that distinction is super important. And it is there's a lot of heaviness and messiness, I think, when we're using government terms to describe groups of people, and systems of oppression. And colonization. And so I am appreciative of what you have just shared. Now, if you have a staff person on your team, I'm going to do the thing. I'm going to ask the question. So you have a staff person on your team and you're just curious. How do you ask questions with care and thoughtfulness? I always lean into you should educate yourself first. Don't make someone a guinea pig, or put your burden of learning on someone else. And if I am curious, how do I approach someone who I think may be Latine? Like, is there a way to say, hey, versus saying, what are you? Because we know that's not okay.
Well, I think our tone of voice, I think our word choice, I think whatever relationship we have with that person, if we do it in public or private, if they're more private or if they're more extroverted, right? Like we need to have some social sense about how we approach this stuff. But not unlike pronouns, I love when this kind of stuff can just be talked about, Now I come into the room in a certain kind of way with a certain kind of background, so that might facilitate this in some moments. But I love when folks are comfortable sharing, hey, please share with us whatever you're comfortable about your identities. We'd love to hear your pronouns. We'd love to hear, your ethnicities. We'd love to hear whatever, whatever. And I like to say the word ethnicity. I think that's a broader term than race. Race does, I mean, we could have a conversation on it if race exists. It certainly exists socially, right?
Right.
If not biologically. But another thing that's hard about Latine is that we can be of any race, right? And so there's so much mixing, there's so much diversity. Even if you go to each Latin country, you will see diversity in what people look like. And so we should never assume we know people's background no matter what. But I think especially with this group, it's really hard. You can't tell by name, you can't tell by first name, last name, what language they speak, what accent they have. And so I think if we can just normalize it for everybody, and kind of be like, hey, share whatever you're comfortable sharing about yourself, and then modeling that behavior. If people are comfortable, I hope that that can open up a conversation.
Yeah, and I like how you said, like, how do we approach everyone in that way of, I am curious about you. I want to get to know you. How do we get to know each other and what
Yeah.
we all bring into the space? Because I think that's the biggest piece of inclusion. It's like, who is sitting at the table? Who's not at the table? And then how do we make sure that everyone feels that they are welcomed in
Yeah.
that space and can bring as much of their authentic self as they feel comfortable and, dare I say, safe to do, right, in whatever
Yes.
setting. So thank you
Yeah.
for answering that question for me.
Well,
So
and with
oh, go ahead.
intersectionality, I just want to say, with intersectionality, different aspects of my identity might be more prevalent in different spaces, right? And so if I'm in some spaces, it might be like, oh, I really want to talk about my sexuality, or I really want to talk about my gender, or I really want to talk about my ethnicity, or my class background, or my regional background. And one can certainly share all of that if they feel comfortable, but not everyone identifies in equal ways with all of those things.
You're right. We're not just one thing, right? Like we're so much more. And inviting that in and saying, talk like, who are you? What do you bring? What are you about? I think is a
Yeah.
really cool way versus like, oh, Black Crystal just walked into the room. Like I am so much
Right.
more
Right.
than a Black person. And that's my salient identity. And there's so many other pieces that help me navigate the world in ways of being that I want people to know about as
Yeah.
well.
And I don't know, maybe you're Afro-Latino. I have no idea. I don't know your background. Maybe you don't identify with any of those things and you have other background, right? Like, it's so important not to assume, even when we think it's really clear. And that's true with gender, with ethnicity, with anything.
I love that. I am Creole, so I'm Black and
Yeah.
French on my mom's side. And so that's really cool. So like when you, because people will look and say, oh, you're again XYZ. And then if you sit down and invite in, again, if it's comfortable, like you talked about, what is the relationship? What is the setting? Is this a safe person to talk to? And do you want to engage? There's some
Yeah.
really cool things you can uncover as you begin to connect with people.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
I'm like, we could talk about this all
Yeah,
day.
we can talk forever.
Okay, so I want to move into training housing staff. So, what are some things that we should consider or we should be doing when we're training our housing professionals, whether it be student staff or our full-timers or GAs, to work with students who identify as Latinx?
Yeah. I think it's really important to try to learn first what is the group composition of Latinx students on your campus. Not that everyone's going to fall into one group, but and you know this from working in different parts of the US. In Northern Arizona, it's going to be a certain kind of group, stereotypically, than if we were in Miami or than if we were in Chicago or New York City or something like that. And so, again, these are stereotypes, and it doesn't mean that this is going to be true for every single student. But I think if we try to learn more about the specific Latinx subgroup or subgroups, plural, that are on our campus, that can go a long way. There's a huge, like, this is a gigantic group of people that we're talking about, right? Like, this is technically an ethnically glossed term that does not really give specifics. So that's true of all of these terms that we have in the US, but it's an incredibly diverse group. Just like saying Asian, that's an incredibly
Yeah.
diverse group of people, right? And so Latine are the largest so-called ethnic minority group in the US. Like I already said, we can be of any race, so you can't tell by color of skin or any of that kind of stuff. We intermarry more than any other group in the US, and we intermarry with all other groups. So we don't just intermarry like with one group. So there's a ton of mixing of folks. There's a ton of like, oh, well, my mom is this, and my dad was this, and I was raised by these people, and whatever, whatever. And so all of that can be relevant as far as what is a student bringing with them to campus. So I think learning about the specific, Latine subgroup is helpful. I think not making assumptions is really helpful. Again, this goes back to the ask your students what they need. If you all can partner, if you don't already, if there's any sort of group on campus that specifically serves either students of color or Latine students in particular, if there's any sort of like Dreamers group on campus that's specifically around citizenship and often financial aid, but a lot of times there's really great cultural knowledge that can go along with that. Knowing the politics in your region is really important. This is super relevant in, the border states of the US, but it's really relevant everywhere. Not with every group, right? Puerto Ricans don't have citizenship issues in the same way of other groups just because of the politics, but even knowing that, right? If most of your students are Puerto Rican on campus and you're over here talking about immigration, they'll be like, that's not relevant for us. We need to understand that, right? Similarly, if you think all Latin groups are poor, that's not true either, right? So it's really important to learn as much as possible. And I know that it's hard because there's a lot of students on campus and you all have so much to do and so much training. But if we could partner with another group or even a student group or something and try to tag team it and also learn from the work that they've already done or research they've already gathered, hopefully it can be something that's actually possible.
I think about, like that self-education. So, like, what can I learn about, like you said, the regional area, what subgroups are here on our campus? Because here we're 27.1%, we're HSI serving institution.
Yeah. I love that.
Right. What is within the 27.1? I
Yeah.
don't know the breakdown. I will name
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So what, and so how do we not present data? I know, we have to present data, for reporting purposes and to meet that minimum requirement to be HSI. And can we give the breakdown? Like, that would
Yeah.
be really, really cool to know where folks are coming from. And then, so educating yourself where they're coming from, what are the regional pieces? Like, my brain is just spinning with, like, it sounds like in the political pieces, right? Where, I have a person that I used to work with that talked about, like, I'm here and my parents are back home and I haven't seen them in years. And that can impact students' ability
Oh, yeah.
to, like make connections too. Like, maybe, my guess is, like, maybe they are wanting to have deeper connections or maybe have more mentorship.
Yeah.
And maybe talking about family is something that could be triggering or really painful when other folks are talking about going home for the break. Like, so I think just that awareness can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. And I love partnering with different departments because let's tag team it, right? So maybe enrollment management has that data and they're like, we have all this data, no one ever asks for it. Or maybe they could easily gather that data or something. And then you could do a cool PSA on campus about it. Did you know that blah, blah, blah percent is from blah, blah, blah? That could be really fun for so many different reasons.
And we should not be doing this all ourselves. Like, housing for a long time have been generalist, right? We do a little bit of everything. Sometimes we do our own in-house training. And I think that there it's okay to be specialists in areas, and it's important to partner and pull in the folks who can give you some really good information and then challenge you to grow and learn. It's also ensure that you're not doing harm to the folks that we're
Yeah.
trying to help and support. And
Well,
then
and then those
obviously,
other departments know what you all do because so many people do not get how hard housing's job is, right? Even on campus, they're like, okay, whatever. How hard is it? They have no idea everything that goes into it, and that's huge.
It's like pizza parties and DoorDash. I'm like,
Right.
no. They do a lot more than that.
Yeah.
So I talked a little bit about family. And so it's my understanding that family can be an important part of students from this background. And so what can housing, well, check me if this is a stereotype. I really want to know that. And what can housing professionals do to replicate family? Is that even welcomed or thought of? Or do we just ask students about their family?
Yeah. I mean, it is a stereotype, but it's also true, right? So it's not like a stereotype that's made up out of, meanness or something. But just because it's true collectively, right, of the countries of origin doesn't mean it's true for each individual, as we all know, right? So it's like knowing something in general and then really trying to understand the people around us is important. So that's where cultural humility comes in, right? Like not thinking we know stuff about people until we really know them at a deeper level. But I think it's important, you're talking about collectivism from my perspective, right? And so I think it is important to know that for students who are Latine, regardless of how long they've been in US or how they were raised, we'll talk about acculturation levels, like that can super, impact folks. But it's like these are collectivistic cultures that they're coming from, And often that means that the individual is not the focus, whether it's the family that's the focus, how we define family, In US, it's called nuclear family. That term doesn't really exist in other cultures, but it's like family can be just parents and siblings, or it can be much larger. But yeah, in general, the individual is not the focus, right? And so I think when we try to look at it from that way, and when we remember that most higher ed, the way we're trained, the theories we're taught, all this stuff are so individualistic, so Eurocentric. How do we change our communication style? Can we say words like we instead of you or I? Even if you're just talking to one person, saying we can sort of bring in that person in a different way. They're like, hey, you should do this. It's like, we need to care about our community, right? If you're having some sort of like conduct discussion or whatever. And I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, but if we just try to think of it differently and more collectively, I do think that that really makes a difference. And so for some students, absolutely. You know, it's a great example that you gave. If they're not around family and they wish they could be for the holidays or the breaks or the this or the that, just even support on the weekends or whatever it is, then having a more familial space could be amazing. And also, we're not trying to replicate anything that would be disrespectful. I'm not trying to act like your mom or your grandma or your this or your that. And I think, again, knowing what our students need and trying to respond to that. In some way, all students need to feel, like home and that connection. And also, it might be more so for folks coming from a collectivistic background just because of how people are oriented and how people are raised.
And it's the awareness of, some things that could be traditions or pieces of culture, having awareness of it. And I think it's not going to fact check, is this true or not? It's literally, again, who are you? Where are you from? What do you need? How can we, be a community? And what would that look like? How do we start to build community for all of our students, in particular, again, talking about our students of color? Like, there are some things that we know as practitioners that students need more of, or may need things in a different way. Or we, language matters too. And so there's the awareness piece, and then actually checking to make sure that that's going to land well with that particular community, and or partnering with that community. To make sure it makes sense. So when it's my programs, we do programs, right? We got to give them stuff to do outside of class. What are some programmatic things that we can do in housing to support students of this identity, our Latinx students? And then, are there activities or visual markers that we can place? Like, what would feel like home, or some programs that are like, yes, that works. And then if you have any like, no, please don't, because you've heard students say, I can't believe my RA did this thing, that would be helpful to know too.
Again, it's hard. So programming is a big thing, and I know it's a lot of work and all this kind of stuff. But if we know who our people are, right? If we know who our specific Latine subgroup members are, and again, as much as we can, things specific to that culture could be really cool. So, not in a stereotypical way, not an objectifying way, but could we have more colors represented? Could we have some music playing? Music is fun because it's really good for all of us psychologically. And there's so many different kinds that, okay, if this group didn't respond to this one, let's try a different one or whatever, Spotify makes it easy. We can find, group stuff on there that already exists or playlists or whatever. Can we just have some of that around? Or can we have some movies that are not only from US in whatever kind of way, that even if our students are from US, they may have grown up watching stuff, or that might remind them of home, or it might feel fun in some kind of way to see some different things. Again, we're so lucky these days with access that we didn't have before, even 10 years ago, right? And so I was on a campus recently that has a ton of Latin students, and I think most of them are Mexican American, some Central American, and then a lot of students who are both Mexican and indigenous US. And so it was summer, it was when the Copa America football, which US calls soccer, when that whole like a tournament, I guess you could say, was happening. And so in the student union, they had it decorated with all these flags, and it was really the flags of the whole world. But it was just really cool to see all the flags there. and they had a giant TV, which they always have at the student union, but they sort of put the flags there by the TV, had a bunch of programming around the specific games, and students can come and watch TV anyway in that space, but they specifically made it about the Copa America tournament, and it was just so cool and inclusive. Not that every Latine student loves soccer, not that
Right.
everyone's into sport, but it was just really neat that there was like recognition that this really big thing is happening. And Latin American countries are crazy about soccer. The world actually is crazy about soccer. It's just not US as much. And it was just a really cool, not even super specific ethnicity-wise, but so inclusive. And I was like, oh my gosh, this feels so fun. Counter that with another campus I was at. This was years ago. Hopefully they've stopped doing this. But whenever they were trying to be more inclusive with food in their dining hall, right? And it was a predominantly white campus. And so they were calling it, I'm sure, like Hispanic Food Night or something, when really it was like a Taco Tuesday thing, and it was technically Mexican food. And they had a ton of stereotypical, like giant sombreros and whatever other stereotypes people have about Mexicans. And it was like, oh my God, this is offensive to a Mexican, first of all. It's offensive to anyone who's Latin who isn't Mexican. And to conflate those, it was just really like clear that someone who doesn't know the culture put this together, right? And so probably just asking five students would have been helpful in that regard, or taking feedback from students, because students were trying to share, this is really offensive. And they were like, well, you said that you wanted more culture and we're giving you more culture. And it's like, that's not a great way to respond, you know, when people try to tell you something. So I appreciate them trying to be more inclusive, and it just did not, it just didn't go well because of the way that it was so stereotypical, you know? And so it's hard to know how things are going to land. But I think if we try to know more about our groups and then listen if they give us feedback, hopefully we can learn over time, like, okay, this really worked for this group, or this helped folks feel like they were seen, which I think is what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to have folks feel like, oh, I want to go to that program. I felt good going to that program. Maybe I made some friends, or I at least didn't feel bad about myself or others when I was at.
Because I think on our some of our PWI campuses, folks with marginalized identities, particular race, like sometimes feel bad. And speaking for, you know, speak for myself, but like sometimes you're walking across campus and no one else looks like you, right? For like two blocks, you know, or sometimes you see another person and you like give each other like the heads up, you know, the like, hey,
Right.
you know, like instant best friends, you know. And not that that has to happen. And then you go to this event and you're home, right? You're home away from home. And then there's a stereotype or something messy that happens. And it's like, now this is in my home, or someone wrote something on my dry erase board. And the one place where I can be myself for this next 9, 10 months, like, what do I do now, right? I was at a campus years ago, and I remember there was a Cinco de Mayo program. And someone in the space, they said, like, this is not like a program we should be having, right? And it was just really fascinating to me, because I think sometimes folks can just say, oh, here's this thing on the calendar, and from my lens, let's just do it. We have the holiday calendar and we're just going to put stuff on, or, oh, let's do, you know, Dia de los Muertos. Like, you know, we have people like, just, we're going to make ofrendas. And I was like, have you talked to anybody? Who are you partnering with? Because in an effort to try to be inclusive, we just take a list and just start planning stuff, versus like what you've been reiterating multiple times. Who are the groups? Are you asking for help? And are you really delivering things that make people feel good and welcomed and a part of the community?
Something that, you know, Mexican Americans are like two-thirds of the Latine population in the US, which makes sense if you know the history and all this kind of stuff. But people who aren't Mexican American will tell you, and who are Latine, they'll tell you, oh my God, people confuse me all the time. Or like most of us who are Latine, wherever we go, we're called that group, you know, like whatever they know. So when I'm hanging out with friends in New York, all of a sudden I'm Cuban, or I'm Puerto Rican, if I'm in Miami, if I'm in LA, and it's just like, that doesn't feel good either. And there's such a Mexican bias towards the stuff that the US is aware of, again, because it is a predominant group, but that is not the only group of folks that are Latine, right? And the last thing we want to do, sure, that might be celebrated in Mexico. Well, really, Cinco de Mayo is not a big thing for any of us. It's just, I don't know why it became so popular among white people in the US. I know they like to drink on that holiday, but it's like, that's not a thing that's celebrated if you go to these countries. I saw a really cool program once that was like just, it was a very passive program, right? It was just illustrating all of the independence days of the various Latin American countries. And I was like, that is so cool, right? Sometimes you hear Mexican Independence Day talked about. You never hear other countries' Independence Days talked about. That was a really cool thing, passive. Someone just took the time to put the information around, and it just like helped people feel seen. Had a little flag up. People love seeing the flag of their country, the colors, et cetera, et cetera. And relatively simple, that really helped not only educate everybody, but also hopefully help folks feel included.
Like, I just imagine, like, if you talk about like the colors and the flags and folks being able to share pieces of themselves and ancestry and culture, it just like it feels beautiful and inviting, right? And I think there's a way to do it where it doesn't feel voyeuristic, or I say like a menagerie, like we're gonna go peek in at folks or put them on display, but it's the partnering and making connections and engaging and just being aware of context too. Like, I was talking to a colleague the other day and I was like, how was your long 4-day weekend? And then I forgot they were in Europe and they probably didn't celebrate 4th of July. But I was thinking about me, right? And so how do you step back? And really be aware of context, and where folks are coming from. And some of our days are not salient for other folks, right? And that is okay.
And
So
if we have a relationship, and if we have trust, and if we've taken time to build a safe space, not just saying you're safe here, that's not a safe space, right? That it really requires collaboratively building it. Then it's like, actually, Crystal, remember I was in blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh my God, you're right. Did you have a great time? That's what I care about, right? That's what I'm trying to talk about. As opposed to like, oh my gosh, she doesn't care. She didn't remember and all this stuff. A relationship goes a long way.
It does. It does. Okay. So we talked about programs. We gave some really good ideas and some things to think about. And so I know some things I'm gonna, research and learn more about when we're done chatting today, Geneva. So when we first started, you talked about thriving and the connection to academic success. I want to get a little bit into, any data you have or pieces you want to share with regard to retention. And so what's the connection between a Latine student saying, I want to stay because my living environment has been good? Is there any correlation there, any connection of good home on campus equal I will graduate and I want to come back every year to this campus?
Yes, and I want to tell my family about it, and I want them to come here or just to go to university in general. But we see these kinds of trickle-down effects in a lot of groups, first-gen students being one of them, Latine students being others, but I'm sure other students as well. I think anytime we feel successful and we have a good experience, that's going to have a certain valence in our memory, right? It's going to have a positive valence in our memory. We're going to think fondly about it. So even if I only lived on campus my first year, because I needed to move off, I needed to do whatever, I had to go back home, whatever, and commute, whatever, it's like I think positively about it. I speak positively about it with others. If you have a campus where people can live, their whole time, that's amazing if they want to, et cetera, et cetera. But even if they don't live there their whole, 4 to 6 years, whatever the average is, for their major, it's still, did they have a good experience with the time? And I think that that starts with orientation. That starts with what does your website look like? That starts with what kind of brochures do we give to students? Do we include family in orientation? If you have budgets, I know it's hard, I know it's complicated. And not just family, but anyone who supports the student, right? It doesn't have to be a family member necessarily. But we've seen with Latine students that when we open it up to, I think we said, loved ones or something like that, because we weren't trying to bias just towards family. And when we were truly open to them bringing people of all ages, we saw grandparents, we saw kids, we saw everything. Sometimes the student's child or their younger sibling or their younger cousin or whatever. And then over time, we saw that that person became interested in the campus, or at least they knew they felt safe in housing, or they liked the building because it was air conditioned, or whatever stood
Yeah.
out in their mind. Doesn't even matter, right? It matters that it was a positive experience and that they felt included. And so, not that every Latine speaks Spanish, because they don't, first of all, and Spanish is not the only language spoken in Latin American countries. But even just having, if you know that your group has a large Spanish-speaking population, or their families or loved ones often speak Spanish, having information in Spanish is huge. And nowadays, with all of our resources, with Google Translate and whatever, we can hopefully at least have a little bit of information available in a language if that is relevant for them, And that just kind of starts off by it feeling warm, by it feeling inclusive. Even if I don't speak Spanish, if I know someone who does, they can access it. It's really huge.
I've learned so much, and I know that I'm not the only person who's learned something, and I want to learn more. And so, for housing professionals who want to learn
Yeah.
how to support our Latine students who live on college campuses, where do you recommend they start?
Yeah. There's some really cool websites, and I can give them to you, so you can include them. But like, there's a group called Excelencia in Education, which has a lot of fact sheets and publications on Latine students in higher ed. It's not necessarily housing specific, but there is stuff in there about housing as well as other stuff, about being a student. The American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education. There's that word again, but again, it's a government sort of thing. In the national organization, and also the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities. Again, these aren't housing specific, but they are Latine student specific in higher ed, and just really cool resources, really cool websites with fact sheets and all that kind of stuff. If you go on Instagram, this isn't always true, but a lot of either student groups have some kind of something on Instagram. Whether it's at your campus or not, sometimes we can learn a lot. Different people approach Instagram differently, and TikTok also has some stuff. But Instagram's cool because a lot of people will just post like an informational sheet or a really cool thing that, even if that's not a group from your campus, you could still learn from or remember. All right, this is a really big deal in this group. Let me, try to encourage some programming around this or something like that. So those are less formal. And not necessarily with beautiful references and citations and all that kind of stuff, but I think it's really organic, and it really kind of gives us a vibe of what people are talking about for themselves, assuming that they created it voluntarily, which it looks like they did for a lot of the stuff that I'm able to access. And so there's a ton of stuff like that on Instagram as well, and TikTok too, but again, that's a different medium, may or may not be allowed in the same kind of way. But there's stuff out there on social media that I think we can engage in creative ways too.
It's so great that we are in a time where you could, if you're able and have access to the internet, you could type in stuff and then
Yeah.
tons of information comes out. And I always say, like, check it a couple of times to make sure it's, good information and accurate information, but
Absolutely.
information is at, at your disposal, just right there.
Yeah.
We are coming to the end of our time. And I just want to thank you for the work that you continue to do with students, the pieces of yourself and your culture that you share with us today, and just spending time. I think that, we hear the term SHI becoming more popular as we think of the different institutions. I'm very familiar with, like, okay, what is an HBCU? Like, there's things I know and I pay more attention to because of my own identities, and I want to be better and different and learn about how to differently support not only my students, but my colleagues, and educate myself. And so I am very grateful, that you are someone that I was able to reach out to and say, help me understand.
Yeah.
And then how do we learn more so that way we can do right and different by our students who are Latine? And I know now that I'm not going to say Hispanic unless it's for some government survey or a presentation where I have to give a number. And so that's something I'm adding to my toolkit in particular. So thank you, Geneva, for spending time. Lots of great information. I mean, I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, and everyone, thank you for joining us on this episode of Res Ed Chat. If you have an idea of a topic or a person that you would like us to have on the show, please let us know by reaching out to Room Pact. Take care.